like the sun. You see the best of me when I have got my gun. I'm gonna get me a gun. I'm gonna get me a gun.
Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Michael Cohen, who's a fellow at the Century Foundation and a regular columnist at The Guardian of the UK and The Observer. He is the author of Live from the Campaign Trail, The Greatest Presidential Campaign Speeches of the 20th Century and How They Shaped Modern America. Previously served in the United States Department of State as the chief speechwriter for the United States representative to the United Nations, and has also worked at the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace. His latest article at the UK Guardian and The Observer is Why Does America Lose Its Head Over Terror But Ignore Its Daily Gun Deaths? Welcome to Background Briefing, Michael Cohen.
Thank you. Great to be here.
And it is extraordinary that a couple of losers with pressure cookers shut down a major American city for almost a week. The entire country was glued to cable news. And it is, as you point out in your article, it's surreal and difficult to explain that Americans place an inordinate fear on violence that is random and unexplained, that can be blamed on others like jihadists and terrorists and evildoers, etc., but lurking dangers all around us, from guns, our unhealthy diets, the workplace that kills 14 Americans every single day, they're just accepted as part of life, the price of freedom. I'm quoting you.
So thank you.
I'm sure you agree with it.
I very much do agree with it, yes, absolutely. Look, you know, it's I don't have a good explanation for it, and I think the best explanation I can come up with is that we tend to place disproportionate fear on that which seems more random and more unusual and more rare. You know, we've been very lucky in this country that we haven't experienced a great many terrorist attacks. This is a good thing. I would hate for us to become more inert to these types of attacks. But I think part of the consequences of that is that we tend to respond. I think we tend to overreact more in our responses to these attacks than we do other sorts of violence that we kind of take for granted. So I think that's a lot to do with it. And I think that, you know, when these types of attacks get hyped up, when you have cable news running sort of breathless, you know, breaking news all day on it, when you have, you know, politicians talking about, you know, suspending the Constitution, it tends to inflate people's concerns and their fears. And I think that's a lot of what's happened around this particular incident, you know, which was tragic. I don't want to minimize the tragedy of it. It was a horrible attack, and certainly it was terrorizing to a lot of people in Boston and I think around the country. But we need to put this stuff in perspective. This is one of the very few terrorist attacks we've had on American soil since 9/11. And, you know, we are very much not threatened by terrorists, and particularly these two. You know, I find it sort of incredible that this 19-year-old kid who, you know, police I think knew was wounded, was on foot, that they would shut down a whole American city to find him just seems, you know, it's just kind of crazy. I can't imagine that kind of reaction to any other violent incident.
And, of course, this whole incident took place on the very day that the Senate shut down a very modest gun control bill that would improve background checks. And even though the Democrats were able to pass it by a majority because of the arbitrary 60-vote filibuster thresholds that the Republicans have imposed in a complete political usurpation, which is mystifying in itself, that they can get away with it. The irony is that these guys were pretty well armed, weren't they? And they had explosives, and the NRA seems to be determined that America's criminals are the best armed in the world. And indeed, explosives cannot be tagged because the NRA prevented the ATF from having manufacturers of explosives put tags in. So there's something surreal going on here.
Very much, yeah. It's surreal. And I'll tell you something else, too. I mean, what you hear, and I heard this from a few Republicans, was, you know, criminals won't, you know, they won't abide by background checks. Right, they won't buy their guns, you know, if they know the background check, so they won't work. But I mean, that's exactly the point, isn't it? The point is to prevent criminals from buying guns in the first place, and to make it harder for them to do that. And it's such a strange thing that you know, the background check that was being proposed was rather, you know, I think pretty minor. I mean, it basically, you know, sort of closed the gun show loophole. It would have made it harder for people who have mental illness, harder to criminal record, to buy a gun. I don't know the story of whether these two brothers up in Boston had a hard time buying a gun, but certainly one of them had been, you know, convicted of a domestic violence attack. It might have been harder for him to buy a gun because of this, if there was a background check in place. It just seems that this is a rather small inconvenience to ask of gun purchasers in order to keep guns out of the hands of potential criminals or potential, you know, violent offenders. But again, you know, it gets portrayed as some sort of infringement on liberty and our freedom, and thus it can't become a law. And yet at the same time, I mean, what I find sort of crazy at the same time, many Bostonians willingly accepted the idea of staying in their homes all day long because their governor told them they had to, because there was a threat. You know, there wasn't, I've yet to see really good evidence for why that lockdown was necessary. And yet Americans, you know, were easily cowed into basically abiding by this sort of arbitrary order from the police.
But the irony is, of course, Michael Cohen, is that the minute that they lifted that embargo on people getting out of their homes, this guy went out of his home and found the terrorist on the loose. So,
absolutely.
I mean,
yeah.
It would have been better off engaging Bostonians in the hunt rather than having holed up, cowering under their beds. Now, again, I'm speaking with Michael Cohen, a fellow at the Century Foundation, a regular columnist at The Guardian of the UK and The Observer. He previously served in the United States Department of State as chief speechwriter for the United States representative to the United Nations and also worked at the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace. His latest article at the UK Guardian and The Observer is Why Does America Lose Its Head Over Terror But Ignore Its Daily Gun Deaths? And just again to quote your article here, on the same day of the marathon bombing in Boston, 11 Americans were murdered. The pregnant Breshawna Jackson was killed in Dallas, allegedly by a boyfriend. In Richmond, California, James Tucker III was shot and killed while riding his bicycle. Assailants unknown. Nigel Hardy, a 13-year-old boy in Palmdale, California, who was being bullied at school, took his own life. He used the gun that his father kept at home. And in Brooklyn, New York, an off-duty police officer used her department-issued Glock 9mm handgun to kill herself, her boyfriend, and her one-year-old child. That's just one day in America. Now, in the past four months, there have been 3,531 Americans killed by guns, and which total that, of course, surpasses the numbers of Americans killed on 9/11. So, again, I feel like I'm in the alternative universe. These rational arguments, they obviously don't matter to followers of the NRA, but at what point are they going to matter to the majority of Americans, and so that they can get fired up as much as the NRA people are fired up? You know, if they've 90% support background checks, maybe 90% of Americans ought to start voting and getting politically active, because if there are only 4 million members of the NRA, that's 1% of the population. So you're really down to the 1% versus the 90%.
Yeah, I mean, I think you have a problem here where people who care about this issue and vote on this issue, vote exclusively on this issue, are people who are supporters of the NRA and people who are who are anti-gun control. So, you know, there just has not been at any point in this country a real groundswell among Americans to sort of to push some of these gun control measures. I mean, I think there's nominal support for them. I mean, the background checks had about 90% support. But it doesn't seem to be an issue that gets people, you know, rallies them, and it's not a single issue for people. You know, they're not going to vote exclusively on the gun issue. And I think it's also a difference, by the way, in states. I mean, I live in New York, and you'd be hard-pressed to find any politician in the state who would be anti-gun control, you know, be pro-NRA. You know, that's why we have, actually, in New York, one of the toughest gun laws in the country. But if you go to, you know, the Deep South, if you go to the Far West, you're going to have a much different point of view on this. I think it has a lot to do with the problem, is that you rarely have a situation in which you have sort of a pro-gun, you know, pro-gun control versus anti-gun control candidate. But I think in general, you know, the NRA has made themselves up into a very powerful organization. And, you know, their imprimatur for candidates matters. That's why you saw so many Democrats. I mean, you saw 4 Democrats who didn't vote for the bill, who voted against the background checks. And I think for a lot of Republicans, they just see no political benefit in supporting this, in upsetting a key constituency of theirs. So I don't know how this changes. I mean, maybe this vote in the Senate was the first step in a long, drawn-out process of making gun control more palatable to Americans, and maybe outraging enough Americans that they're going to do something about it. But this isn't going to happen overnight. And as you suggested, it's going to take a lot of people getting a lot angrier and voting on this issue. But, you know, you're talking maybe years down the road before this has a real impact. And in the meantime, I mean, how many Americans needlessly have to die before the stranglehold of the NRA is broken? I mean, this is what I find, you know, so tragic. I mean, as you mentioned those numbers, since Newtown, I mean, this is 4 months, we've lost more Americans than we lost on 9/11 from gun violence. That is a stunningly high number. And part of the reason it is so high, not the only reason, part of the reason it's so high is because of the easy availability of guns and people's ability to purchase them. And that's, you know, there's a reason why we have the highest level of gun violence in the world. And that's a big part of it.
Well, but today, two key senators, Charles Schumer and John McCain, came out saying that this legislation will come back before the end of the year as public attitudes shift towards stricter controls. And Kelly Ayotte is being targeted. She's the New Hampshire senator whose poll numbers have dropped precipitously because there's been pushback in the local press about her vote. And also the Mitch McConnell, he's being targeted. Both Ayotte and McConnell are being targeted by Gabby Giffords' group, Americans for Responsible Solutions. They're going to be running ads trying to give them some political payback. So there's an indication that there might be a backlash in terms of a political movement here, a pushback against the NRA. And if Mayor Bloomberg, with unlimited funds, could fund a lot of this stuff in the 2014 elections, maybe it could become an issue. It seems to me that at some point or other, progressives and liberals in this country have got to stop expecting to lose and decide to win for a change, because I guarantee you the NRA guys, they're determined to win.
Well, here's why there is some reason, I think, for optimism, and it's a small reason, but nonetheless a reason. You have, I think, after this vote, you have you have greater support for gun control measures than you did pre-Newtown. And I think there is actually among Democrats less fear about running on the gun issue. Now, that's not true in every state. You know, Mark Pryor is not going to, and Arkansas and Mark Begich in Alaska are not going to be running on these issues. But I think for a lot of Democrats, there is going to be more, let's say less reluctance to sort of talk about this issue. And I think even on the presidential level. And in a way, it could become an issue that is a dividing line between Democrats and Republicans that actually helps Democrats. There's no question that in red states, this is a major, major issue. But I think if you can see a blue state Democrats running on this issue and profiting from it, I mean, politically profiting from it, then I think you have a possibility for change. And Kelly Ayotte's an interesting example. You know, if she loses her Senate race, and, you know, the sense of it is because of her position on gun control, that will spark change. And you will have Republicans in perhaps, less red states or bluer states or purple states who might say, I have to get ahead of this issue and I can't be just, you know, towing the NRA line. That's how this change happens. But, you know how politicians are, unfortunately. Until they see, you know, somebody lose because of it, I'm not so sure you're going to see a real shift happen. And for a lot of Democrats, they remember 1994 that a lot of red state Dems lost because of their vote on the assault weapons ban. And that is something that has resonated for a lot of Democrats since then. So, you know, again, it's a process. And the only hope you can take out of this experience is that what happened in the Senate last week begins that process of Democrats being more aggressive on the issue and Republicans being more defensive on the issue and voters caring about the issue. I mean, you know, again, I care about this issue passionately, but I live in a state in which, you know, my congressmen and senators and governors, you know, they all take my position on this issue. So it's harder for, I think, those in blue states to have their voices heard. But I think when you have more people in swing states who are upset about this, then maybe it has an impact, and hopefully it will.
Well, but there's got to be more urban – there are more urban people than rural people, and obviously in the Senate it's stacked in favor of these small states, the red states, because they get two per state. And California with 38 million people going to get two, and Wyoming with, 760,000 or something ridiculous, you know, but one congressional district, you know.
Yeah.
And the same with Alaska, one congressional district. They get two votes. We know about that. But the rural states can hoard the guns, but the guns are used in urban states, and you've got a lot of soccer bums out there. You've got a lot of mayhem going on in Chicago and other cities. I know they vote Democrat by and large, but the suburbs more and more, I think, surely would impact. I just have a feeling that the numbers are on the side of change. It's just a question of motivation.
Yeah, I think you're right. It's a question of whether you can get people to vote on this issue and to vote against someone who is on the wrong side of this issue. And, you know, until you see it actually happen, I mean, New Hampshire could be a test case for it, but until you see it actually happen, I don't think you're going to see any change. I hate to say that, but until politicians feel this is an issue that hurts them. I mean, look at immigration as a perfect example of this. You know, Republicans didn't want to do anything in immigration the past couple of years, and suddenly they do, and it's because they think it cost them the 2012 election. It didn't, but that's what they think. And so they think they have to be on the right side of Hispanic voters, and this is the way to do it. So when the political calculation changes, that's when you'll see change in this issue. It hasn't happened yet. There are too many counterexamples of people, you know, losing or becoming more vulnerable because of the position on guns than being sort of, you know, pro-gun control, than people being hurt because they're anti-gun control. And until that happens, I just politicians aren't going to make the change you want to see. Ultimately, the real impetus will come from the ballot box. It won't come from public opinion.
Well, just in closing, Michael Cohen, since we're talking about the surreal, which is unfortunately real in this country, the five living presidents in Dallas today in the inauguration of George W. Bush Presidential Library. And what I find extraordinary now is that Fox pundits and a number of congressional Republicans are now saying, and Dana Perino and others, it's all the same talking points. You know, the mill turns this stuff out, and it sort of goes from the pundits to Fox to the think tanks to Fox to the talking heads, and around it goes, all in unison now they're beginning to chant Krauthammer and et al. Are all saying Bush kept us safe and Obama didn't. Bush kept us safe, and look what happened under Obama. We have terrorist attacks. As though 9/11 never happened. I mean, what do you do? Is it really a case that we are in an alternative universe and facts don't matter, at least with these people?
I have to say, my favorite talking point was that was somebody arguing that after 9/11 that there were no terrorist attacks on American soil. I mean, you know, 9/11 seems like a relevant data point as far as you want to assess the Bush presidency on terrorism. I think the efforts of the Bush apologists are not going to succeed, largely because I think people's views about Bush are pretty solid. You saw this one poll that claimed 47% approval, which actually is not unusual. The presidents often look better in the rearview mirror. That number is still pretty low. I've seen other numbers that are even lower. But, I mean, I go back to polls you saw last year, which they asked Americans, who do you blame for the economic crisis? And overwhelmingly, it was Bush and not Obama. I think those talking points you're referring to, I mean, they exist. They are repellent, frankly. But they, I think, appeal to narrow partisans. I don't think many Americans are looking back on George Bush's presidency and saying, yeah, it wasn't so bad. I think it's, you know, generally understood to have been an unmitigated disaster, and I think, you know, I'd be very surprised that changed anytime soon.
Well, Michael Cohen,
look, anything's possible, right?
Sure.
I mean, I guess it could happen, but I remain, on this one, I remain at least somewhat confident that people will continue to view Bush's presidency as the disaster that it was.
Well, I thank you so much for joining us here today, Michael Cohen.
Always a pleasure. Thank you.
Again, I've been speaking with Michael Cohen, who's a fellow at the Century Foundation and a regular columnist at The Guardian of the UK and The Observer. He is the author of Life and the Campaign Trail, The Greatest Presidential Campaign Speeches of the 20th Century and How They Shaped Modern America. Previously served in the United States Department of State as chief speechwriter for the U.S. representative to the United Nations and also worked at the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace. His latest article at the UK Guardian and The Observer is Why Does America Lose Its Head Over Terror But Ignore Its Daily Gun Deaths? We're going to take a brief station break and back talking about the corporate takeover of food.